Session.
That's you have the gavel, sorry.
But not usually in a work session. We live, Scott? All right, good morning. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting today at the 12th floor of the Capitol in a work session for case number PU077759, the CapEx Fargo Transmission Line. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Commissioners Kramer and Fetch, and Mitch Armstrong from staff, and Jerry Lynn from staff. Typically in a work session, this is a chance for the commission to get together and talk through any issues we might have. And this is we've had several work sessions on this, but before we get into it, I'd open up the floor to my colleagues. Do you have any opening comments?
Just good morning and welcome, everybody, and thanks to the company for the late file that I think meets the it allows us to consider information without reopening the case, so I appreciate the good work.
Yes, good morning, everyone. And I appreciate receiving the brief and the information in this case. And from my review of it, I think everything here is a summary of what was in the record. And so I agree. I don't think we need to reopen the hearing and are ready to forge ahead.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. With that, the last time the three of us met, I think basically there was a, you know, we asked for some clarification, additional information, so we received this package, and I think at this time maybe turn it over to Jerry and Mitch if they wanted to summarize any of the key points that they would have seen, and then just open up the general discussion if that sounds okay with Kevin and Bond.
Sure.
Yes.
So I don't know whoever wants to go first.
I can talk. Thank you, Commissioners. The company did file a brief last Friday, and I guess hopefully everybody's had a chance to look through that. They basically put forth the fact that delaying the project is going to be costly, and in my own mind, it adds risk to the project to delay it as well. If we move this thing further south, they're going to have to go back and do the regulatory proceedings all over, including the Minnesota proceedings.
You do know that's not my problem, right?
Yeah, but it is on the timetable.
Yeah.
And
proving that Minnesota's driving this, which has been my objection from the beginning.
They address that in the in the filing as well, and so I.
Jerry, I just don't have sympathy with that argument.
Well, I think that they're saying that Minnesota didn't really drive the process.
I know, but you just did. You just argued that they do.
Regardless, they have to get the permit out of Minnesota, and so they have to go back through the Minnesota procedure. And they figure it'll take about a year to do that, or maybe more.
Yeah,
no. Before we move on the risk...
It's good that we're such good guys, Jerry.
I know. Before we do move on the risk, though, I'd like to just point out that it's a partnership in this, and we've wanted this line a long time. In my mind, I would say there'd be some risk of losing partners, things like that, as the proceedings drag on and the costs add up. And any time you stretch out a timetable a couple of years, you're just adding risk to the project.
So, Jerry, when you say...
it won't get done.
I don't disagree with your comments about risk to the project, but would you also say that you're also adding risk to the North Dakota customers, that they no longer have the reliable power they're going to need? That'd be part of the risk, because this is a reliability line. Would you consider that part of the risk as well?
And we'll talk a little bit about that too here. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's true. The companies did, when they put this thing together, they did consider routes south, and there's a couple of them just a couple miles south of Oxbow that are mentioned in the brief. And they chose this route because it was better than those in their minds. it met the siting criteria better, but it also met their criteria for future development. And
who's there?
The basically NSPs and the transmission planners that are putting this route together, putting this project together, the CapEx partners. If we could look in their filing, they have a map of the area. And it's the second from the last page in the actual filing, not the cover letter, but the filing. It looks like
Figure six, are you looking at?
Yeah.
At the top, it says figure.
Yep, it sure does.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Good job.
So, I'm a judge. I'm used to,
keep it simple. Right?
So one thing that they talked about before that hasn't been explained to the commission really well is there is a line, the Cheyenne Audubon line. It's highlighted in yellow in this picture.
Yeah.
And in all of the transmission studies that that we have done so far in the Fargo area, and what we have in the record in Exhibit 31, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
This line, as you add load and add export capability into the system, it overloads. And so part of the long-term project at some point in the future is to build a tie line from this new 345 kV line up to that Cheyenne Audubon line. And that tie line would be a double circuit 345, and they would upgrade the Cheyenne Audubon line to a double circuit line as well, 345/230, or maybe both 345s on both circuits. And so part of the idea to be further north is to be closer to that Cheyenne Audubon line so that we'd have less expense in building the tie line.
No, is that is all already in the record, what you just told us. You're just highlighting it for.
Yes.
Because I don't recall that discussion very clearly in the hearing. But.
And it wasn't discussed well at the hearing, but this is all coming from Exhibit 31.
Okay.
And the studies that they've got there. And so a 345 kV double circuit line is probably about $1.5 million a mile. And so the future costs of that added on to here, if you go 3, 4, 5 miles south, can add up to the $5 to $10 million range. In addition, you're probably looking at another $10 million or more for the delay in the proceedings. So 20, maybe $30 million worth of extra cost is what we're talking about on this.
How much is this, without me looking at it, how much is this whole project? The whole thing?
The whole project
In
the $300 million range.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah.
So the $300 million is no big deal, but the last 10 or 15 is we're gonna.
I know what you're
saying. We're gonna argue over.
I'd also talk a little bit
about. Here's my point. Here's my only point. My point is let's make a relevant case on the siting, because that's what we're here for, to site the line.
Okay.
Right? You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
Today we're not economic regulators. Today we're siting regulators.
So,
and we're talking about population centers, and we're talking about conveniences, and talking about expanding communities, things like that.
Before we do that,
okay. I'm making a point.
Okay,
but that's part of the process too, though. Is to make sure we serve future growth. I mean, it's a yeah.
No. That is what isn't to me is the economics.
Before we leave this diagram, yeah. I'd like to point out one more thing, and that is, there's a 345 kV line coming across the top of this.
Yes.
That is the only 345 kV line going into the Fargo-Moorhead area. We've long had an issue with the growth in Fargo, trying to keep up with it. And I guess what I'm trying to say is this line has been on the books for a long time. It's important.
Have we issued an advanced termination of prudence on this line?
Yes.
That's my point.
One other
so we don't have to argue the economics of it.
We don't have to argue whether we need it or not. That's
one other point I would bring out is we almost lost the whole Fargo area, Red River Valley, and Lode back in 97 when this line went down in an ice storm. And it's bigger now than it was then, the Lodes. So, I mean, it's even more at risk now than it was then. That being said, the thing is scheduled to go into service right now in 2015. If we go on this schedule.
Jerry, I think, though, I'm following some of Kevin's point, but we've already issued the ADP. We need the line. And in the last work session we had, I quite honestly think all three of us said, make sure there's enough rationale in the record that can justify that this route was better than the southern route, that there was things that environmentally or other things that said this is a better route. And so I was looking for either a reinforcement or additional information that said the southern route goes through more wetland region potentially, or the southern route has more, you know, there's more miles in North Dakota, or something like that. Could you maybe shape some of that as your discussion is too?
I was headed there.
Okay.
And
maybe get there.
There were two routes that they looked at south of this route. One was a highway 18 crossing of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was a crossing where the Minnesota Powers DC line, the line that is now Minnesota Powers, that goes to Duluth, crosses the river. And in both of those cases, the primary thing that made them shy away from it was residences in the close proximity within 500 feet of the line.
Mm-hmm.
At those two river crossing points.
Yeah. And those are just a couple miles south of where we're at now. And so they're closer to the tie line than what we'd be looking if we went further south, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, walk me through again the planning process. We know the start point because there's a substation. And then is the river crossing then the next critical point that's determined, and then they figure out the route along that way, or how much more weight, if any, does a river crossing have than the rest of the siting criteria?
Well,
because I remember in the Minn Kota to Grand Forks line, I mean, that was almost like the critical juncture. Of course, that was very close to the generation point, so it wasn't nearly as
flexible.
Yeah, good point. Flexible as this line is.
This was a good crossing point for them operationally to make the crossing at.
No, but my question though is the priority
of the
though.
Trees around there, they could get in. You remember this from the?
I do. Yeah.
And partially because right there where they're crossing at, they found a spot where the river goes pretty much straight north-south, so they can cross it, span it with a minimal distance on the span.
But my question, though, is it fair planning process that the river crossing has more weight than in most other spots? Or is that not a fair assumption?
Do
you see my question?
It does, because it's...
Either it does or it doesn't, Jerry.
And it's more environmentally sensitive.
Mm-hmm. So do you say it does or it doesn't have more weight?
I don't know if weight is the right thing, but it is a hard place to...
Okay.
Fine.
Mitch, do you get what I'm driving at?
I get where you're driving at. I think the thing with the river crossing that makes it such an issue is it requires the coordination between two different regulatory bodies to meet the line in one place between North Dakota and Minnesota. So it kind of requires a consideration from the company's perspective of all the factors on one side versus all the factors on the other. lining them up appropriately with both.
But if Minnesota wasn't on the other side of this river, would this river crossing still would have, I would think, more importance, dislocation than other areas because there's less flexibility?
Well, there's less flexibility, and then usually with river crossings you run into the other siting criteria of, you know, environmental considerations, so on and so forth. And what I think the company would say is they found one here that meets the criteria on both sides of the river, particularly in, you know, in this proceeding, they would say we found one that meets the North Dakota criteria and we think it's approvable. And then I think basically what I would say is river crossings incorporate more facts that bring into play more considerations under the law.
Okay, thank you.
So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that they can find a route further south.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says they can't. The ones that they considered weren't better than this one, and that's along with the criteria that they wanted to be further north, closer to that tie line, was what caused them to choose this route. It appears mainly what it boils down to is whether or not a half a mile away is far enough away from the edge of that subdivision.
Well, I don't even, quite honestly, I've moved well past that particular point. I don't know if Kevin has enough.
Well, I mean, my general concern isn't the half mile or 2,500 versus 500. It's the overall impact of a larger population base, as opposed to maybe a little more impact on a smaller, you know, on a, for example, they argue that a couple miles south, we have an avoidance area because we'd be within 500 feet of a single residence, and yet they got a permit from the city of Mapleton to hang it over the town. My point being that how hard have we worked to find a less impacting route. Sure, you can make a rationalization. I think that their filing does a good job of it, of making a rational argument for meeting the criteria, the minimum standard of the law. And I think you're arguing the same thing, Jerry. On the other hand, you just argued for why it shouldn't be here at all, why it should be the original northern route. The people that are benefiting the most from the reliability are the people of Fargo. And yet we've moved it further south to impose another population center, albeit a smaller one, to accommodate the people of Fargo, the people who are going to benefit. And I don't want to pit, God knows we don't need to pit two or three small communities against the big one again. And yet that's part of, it's impossible to ignore that, because one of the factors for moving it south is the, quote, the proposed diversion project. And so in some respects, you've just argued for why it ought to be closer to load center. And yet we've accommodated moving it further from the load center. And now we're arguing against moving it further from the load center. And so it's sort of a sloppy argument. And so I'm having this, that's my struggle, is that I don't know that we've done all that we can to find a better route that impacts fewer people, albeit meets the criteria. So that's sort of my big, and by the way, I mean that the extension of the line and crossing the river further south adds miles. Well, of course, that's ridiculous. The line's coming from the south. It doesn't add miles. It shifts the miles, the north-south miles. It's shorter in Minnesota, so it's longer in North Dakota, you know, so.
It would add a little bit, because right now you're coming at a diagonal.
I know, I understand. But once again, yeah, there's political mitigation that has to be considered here. And so, you know, I that's what kind of bothers me, is when we start seeing these stretches, we're talking about a 150, 200-mile line that suddenly the last mile is going to make the determination of whether it's reliable enough. It's coming from the south to the north, but if we cross the river further south, oh my gosh, we're adding $15 million because it's going to be longer. Well, no, it's not. It's the same line. It's the same distance. It's just moving it over to another side. So those are the things that, as I read sort of the rationalized, and maybe it's all in there, the legal requirement, but on top of that is sort of this spin that I find not real.
Let me ask you this, Kevin,
appealing,
if you don't mind walking this
sure
through a little bit. I think I'm hearing your points, and I'm not saying I disagree mm-hmm. with all of them, but the
sure.
We get an application to build whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at the application and make sure it meets the criteria
mm-hmm.
for wind farm, and we either approve or disapprove it.
Sure.
How do you envision us having the luxury of looking at two routes at the same time, such as looking at two locations on a, looking at...
Yeah.
I mean, that's the part that I struggle with, is that, okay, the law says we have these criteria, but it doesn't give us a choice of... Okay, let's look at this route, let's look at this route, let's look at this route, all three at the same time.
It is. That's an interesting point because, of course, Minnesota does require that. They do require two routes.
But the state of North Dakota doesn't.
No. Which means we either give it an up or a down.
Absolutely.
Right.
But that's where the...
That's the dilemma, I understand.
But that was where, the last work session we had is I kept using Minn Kota as the example mm-hmm. of I felt they gave a broader, better argument as to how they whittled down to this route.
Sure.
And so that's kind of what I was looking for, is that how did we whittle this down to here? And so I think some of the arguments you made, Jerry, have not necessarily answered that question as to how they whittled down from those other routes. I mean, like I said, was there more wetlands in that southern route? Was there more
mm-hmm.
prime farmland that was potentially impacted? I mean, there is more distance in North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
so I think that could be an argument
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what... I don't know, is there something you can pull out of there to hit some of that, maybe?
I can hit a few of them.
I mean, does that make sense?
No, it does make sense to
because
me.
Because we don't have the luxury of looking at both routes and saying this one is less, and less to who? Less to the people, less to the farmland,
right.
less to the...
Right. But what we do have is the final authority on whether this one's acceptable.
Sure, but let's suppose hypothetically we say this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Okay? Then we go through and we look at another route. And we look at that route, and in hindsight, we go, you know what, this has more impact than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we reject that one. I mean, that's where
yep.
we don't have the luxury of doing those things.
Nope.
And I think it would be, if I could, maybe a little more global approach that the company would say. Is
mm-hmm.
and with the Wahpeton one, I guess what they say is, you know, look, this added 50 miles of line in North Dakota, plus maybe interconnection,
mm-hmm.
you know, very interesting
sure.
or very, you know, more difficult, because that interconnection then would have to come... impact more citizens by coming from the west side of this line and going into basically the center of Fargo. So I think that would be, you know, the primary justification for why this line is better than the Wahpeton line. As you move further north in the maps indicate, you know, the river crossings, as Jerry mentioned, less straight, there's more trees on the river crossings at these other locations, plus more residences closer than the half mile that's really kind of been the issue with the Bakke subdivision, to move those.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as allowing that interconnection to be shorter and, you know, more likely, I guess, from North Dakota's perspective, to be what I would call their orderly development argument, which would be, hey, we can run this from the Cheyenne line to this line better, frankly, and actually less impactful on North Dakota citizens, because it'll probably be in open fields in Minnesota rather than coming through other population centers within North Dakota. So I think they would say that's an orderly development argument, which would probably apply for all three of those, north of Oxbow and then the two south of Oxbow, except for we've got different environmental considerations on those two southerly lines that I think when they ran into those considerations, you know, and knowing that the preference was to be further north, they said, look, we've got less siting criteria issues at this further north, the one that is proposed right now.
So, but are those arguments you just made backed up in the record in spots?
Yes, I think they are in
okay.
the
What were those environmental impacts further south?
The one, and I think it would go by, you know, looking at these maps on page 4 and 5, and then, you know, just the environmental impacts were the siting criteria with the residences right there for one, which is the 500 feet. And, you know, there's some issue of whether a waiver, I guess, is even enough to go right there.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's, you know, the trees and the impact on the crossings. The one crossing you'll see is really back and forth in that area, so it may require actually two crossings and much more, you know, cutting down of trees. And then, like I said, the orderly development, which is another one of the criteria. I think those would be the main ones, and I think once they, I don't want to put words in the company's mouth, but frankly, I think once they ran into those issues, you know, they moved to routes that didn't have those siting criteria issues. You know, that's what I think they mean, or what I think they mean is their iterative process where we went through the same criteria and we tried to thread the needle into one that didn't raise those legal issues.
As I recall from our last work session, at least in my mind, what I was asking for was, information on why they didn't choose a more northerly route, but why they didn't choose a more southerly route than the one they did. And I think, in my mind, pages 1, 2, and 3 of the brief address that. And it goes on further, certainly. Pages 5 and beyond address, kind of readdress arguments about having met the criteria. And then some other concerns, such as Commissioner Kramer raised about Minnesota regulators driving the project. Maybe next time start in North Dakota and move across and eliminate that.
You won't be here long enough to ever see that happen.
None of us.
That's
None
right.
of us will. Yeah. But
the last line of defense.
Tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess what you've just summed up, Mr. Armstrong, is I think that's all in the record, and I guess I don't know what more the company needs to explain for my benefit to understand why this particular route was chosen.
Fair enough. Well, Jerry, Mitch, do you guys gentlemen have anything else that you wanted to bring before us? And we'll see if there's any more questions. So.
I don't have anything more that I'd like to bring before you, unless the commission has questions. Any of the commissioners have questions to point out, where information is.
Only just to be clear on Figure 6, mm-hmm. the larger map in the back, which is much easier to see. What's in the little, box? It says Oxbow Crossing allows interconnection opportunities between red and yellow, in addition to blue and yellow. So, Jerry, if I am understanding correctly, what you're saying is that Cheyenne Audubon line it tends to get overloaded, and so the crossing would allow this line to interconnect and take some of that load. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, there's two things with being able to interconnect from the red. One, if you interconnect from the blue over here, you have to go through some populated areas of Fargo with a big 345 kV double circuit line. Over here, you got more fields and stuff. And
now you're pointing between the red and yellow?
Yeah, between the red and yellow. So that's one. And two is, in doing transmission planning, the design, if you go to the next figure, the objective is to put a 345 kV ring around Fargo. And that adds to reliability. It gives them a dual feeds coming in from different directions and ability to tie off the 345 kV system in alternate locations later as time goes on. So that is a more ideal planning arrangement.
Thank you.
Do we, and I think there's still a lot of questions that some of my colleagues might have, too. I don't know if Kevin.
I don't think so.
Let me ask this. Do we even have the beginnings of a draft order on this?
Yeah, I believe we do, and we've went through basically the entire order except for this last.
The last session, right?
Section. And I think it just depends how detailed, I guess, we want to get. I mean, what we had done is kind of summarize it.
Because, okay, you jogged my memory. So going through the last time we went through the draft order, I remember the discussion about, I thought that we focused too much about the proposed diversion as a factor as to why we changed the route. I remember that discussion now. And so we wanted to...
And I think we actually switched it even after that, and I kind of went through the record and had, I guess what I'm showing you, I think, is the same copy the commissioners have.
Okay.
Pages 37, 38, 39, you know, paragraphs all through. And I think we were essentially done with the order except for this section, and then we were... look through this order. Is there anything particular in the briefs that the commission, any of the commissioners want to add it, and then we could add that and circulate it and see if we need another work session. But I think that I still think it's all basically covered in the order.
In the draft order. So if we recirculated the draft order, and then we got together and decided if we needed yet another work session on the draft order. Maybe that, if that took you to, I mean,
and
I'd like
and
to,
we may not. I mean, I'm happy to do it, but we may not.
But I guess I'd like to look at the last version of the draft order.
Sure.
And to see where we're at, coupled with the discussion we've had today and this, and see if there's tweaks. And then I suspect I might have some tweaks to it. And I don't, my colleagues might. And if the tweaks are significant enough, we should get together and talk about it one more time before we bring it to a potential vote.
So we'll circulate that. We'll just send, make sure everybody's got the same one. I will just send an email to everybody.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Commissioner Kramer, do you have anything
That's
else?
That's good. No, thank
Commissioner
you.
Fetch. All right. I will close the work session on case number PU 07759. Mm-hmm.